Welcome to another episode of The Builder's Diary from Cloudonaut. So my name is Andreas, and The Builder's Diary is here to get insights into day-to-day challenges of builders. Today I'm very excited to introduce Rico Nugit to the show. He started his career as an IT consultant at IBM and then co-founded a startup Tandemploy, where he built a cloud-based HR software focusing on flexible working models. And then about 2 years ago, he joined Demicon as the business unit lead and principal cloud solution architect. And this is basically where he got into all things AWS. So Rico, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andreas, for having me. It's a great opportunity to talk here, and I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. So we have to reveal the topic for this episode. So this is infrastructure pipelines with GitLab and Terraform Cloud. So we will really dive into the details and how you do that in your day-to-day work with your consulting clients, and talk about all the technical aspects of Terraform, Terraform Cloud, and how to basically build an infrastructure pipeline with that. But before we go into that, I'm interested in your background a little more. So I already introduced you, but the question I have is, so how did you get into all things AWS? Because I know you started at IBM, then you built a cloud-based HR software, but how did you really get into all those AWS details?
So as mentioned, I really started early on in the career working with cloud models and building up cloud systems and going through the different vendors. And for me, it was always important to see different aspects of different clouds and learn more about the specifics about, for example, AWS or Azure. And from where I started, I transitioned into first using a lot of Azure after my time at IBM. And then it was just a natural step to me to also get more working experience in AWS, because especially in the startup scene, you see a lot of AWS used. And I was just very curious about what it's all about and how you can really use it in real life.
Okay, so basically with every career step, so you started with IBM Cloud, then got into Azure, and now at Demicon, you're really diving into AWS, yeah. So you have now three clouds on your list. That's really cool. And one thing I noticed right away when getting into contact with Demicon is that you're really a remote-first company. So maybe can you share some insights into your day-to-day work? So how does it work to work remotely with other teams, so with your colleagues at Demicon, but also with your consulting clients?
That's a really good question. I think being a remote-first company for us means not that we are never meeting in real life, but having the flexibility to work from wherever we want, if that works in, for example, customer situations, or if it's really beneficial to the project. And I think where it really helps is to have focus time. So I think one of the biggest parts why I enjoy also working at home is that I can really schedule and organize my working day a lot better. But then with closely working together with colleagues on a very specific topic, it's sometimes also really good to meet in person. And I think that's where the word hybrid often comes into play, where we at Demicon, we are looking into work together weeks or different working situations where we meet as a team. So depending on the project needs and depending on also the needs of the the people within the project, we make it happen also that we meet in certain locations around Germany.
Yeah, very interesting. So I remember, so I've been doing a lot of consulting work maybe four years ago. And back then it was quite common that you had to travel to the customer, the consulting clients on site. I spend a lot of time in hotels and stuff.
Yep, me too.
So I think being able to do most of that remotely and only meet with the customer or your colleagues when it really is necessary seems to be a big benefit for the whole consulting game.
Yeah, I'm definitely not looking backward to my time when I had to live most of my time in hotels. So I think it was an interesting time, but I don't need it again, to be honest.
Yeah, it's fun and exciting at the beginning,
yes.
but then you're getting used to it and it gets very lonely and boring.
Definitely true.
Okay, then back to our topic. So after we introduced a little bit and talked about Demicon and how it is working there as a consultant, so back to our topic, which is infrastructure pipelines with GitLab and Terraform Cloud. So the first question I have, so I'm a big fan of infrastructure as code as well, but maybe the question that comes up for me is, why building an infrastructure pipeline? So why not just using your infrastructure code and applying that manually? What do you think are the most important reasons to automate that with a pipeline?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, when they're starting working with infrastructure as code, start to deploy their code manually from their machines. And I think it's totally viable for smaller use cases. And if you that doesn't have a really a huge team behind you. But I think, especially when the team grows and more people make changes on the infrastructure, it's getting more and more harder to maintain the manual deployment. And also the error factors get bigger and bigger. And that's, I think, the time where we talk with most clients about infrastructure as code pipelines as well. Because, at a certain degree of a product or a project, also governance gets a lot more important, security topics arise. And all this is something which when you deploy locally, is really hard to achieve. And I think that's really the most talking points we hear from our customers, definitely security, governance, but then also team collaboration, I think, is there at the top.
Yes, as soon as more than one person is editing the infrastructure as code, it makes a lot of sense to have a pipeline in place. So I remember things like having different Terraform versions on your machine and, I don't know, not being able to connect to the S3 bucket and stuff. So it really gets complicated to do that from your own machine. And typically, you're not able to deploy to another infrastructure when someone is, I don't know, on vacation or something, because you're not getting the whole thing up and running. And there, a pipeline really helps. So when working on something with more than one person, can you talk me through the different components a little bit? So how does all those things work together? Terraform, GitLab. So how do you make a pipeline out of that?
Yeah, so basically it all starts with a commit of a developer, and somebody's making a change on Terraform resources, and you need a versioning control system. So some things must be there where the code is stored for being deployed. And the first part is a commit, and then following that, a merge request of the developer to, for example, the main branch. And with Terraform Cloud, you set up a webhook, which is connected to a certain branch in GitLab, for example. And when changes are merged into that branch, the pipeline is being triggered, and the plan and apply phases of Terraform will be run. I think one really important aspect, which I maybe left out in between, is that with merge requests, you also want to know ahead before you merge what's the actual change you will cause in your live infrastructure. And so that's also which feature which you can enable and should enable in Terraform Cloud, that the plans are run ahead of time and give you the expected outcome of what the change will look like when you merge actually your change into the main branch.
Okay, so basically, let me summarize that. So the pipeline consists of a GitLab, which stores the Terraform code.
Yep.
And so you commit to that, you use merge requests and branches and everything. And then you use Terraform Cloud basically to execute the Terraform configuration and apply it to your AWS infrastructure. Then my next question, because personally I've never really used Terraform Cloud, mm-hmm. so I looked into it a few times in different projects, but I either use CloudFormation, or when I use Terraform, I'm typically building either GitHub Actions or code pipeline and code build.
Yep.
So can you what are the main advantages of using Terraform Cloud? Why are you not just using GitLab, which has something like a pipeline as well built in? So what is the USP is basically for using Terraform Cloud for you?
Yeah. So yeah, I think it really depends on also your use cases. So I'm not saying that it's the one fits all solution where you can always go ahead and use it. But I think one of the really big benefits is that you have this observability. So you really can easily check in your different workspaces what kind of resources are actually deployed into the cloud. With that, one of the things which is tightly attached to that observability is also a drift detection feature, which was now added to Terraform Cloud. So I think over time, someone might change with his permissions in AWS Cloud some resources, and you suddenly have a drift in what you are expecting in the cloud and what is actually deployed there. And detecting this drift is, I think, definitely a feature which you can also implement in any CI/CD system, but you need to do that implementation work normally. Then I think a second part is that you have a different platform for really building out in bigger teams your approval processes. So in some companies, it's really important that certain parts of the infrastructure have different approvals than more maybe the application layer, where with the infrastructure where you are changing network parts, the blast radius of your change can be quite devastating and shut down a whole AWS environment and nobody can work anymore. So with that, I think that's also a very powerful feature of Terraform Cloud to really bring this approval process and governance into play. And then a third step is security checks. So there are also open source tools out there where you can, like TFSec or tools like that, who check your Terraform code. But one feature Terraform Cloud also brings with it is Sentinel policies to go even deeper into defining your best practices and standards in the cloud. So for bigger teams, having that one place where it's really checked, okay, is this adhering to our standards or not, is also quite helpful in larger projects.
Okay, well, that's already quite a lot. And actually, it's solving some of the pain points I have. So, and I totally agree that having a process in place to approve certain deployments to an infrastructure is very helpful. And as you said, this is a feature built into Terraform Cloud, so you can make sure who is able to deploy to which environment. Yeah. And I think this is really an important issue. I also like the governance and security features. I have one question about the drift detection. Mm-hmm. So does it really work? Because I know it from CloudFormation and it's not working at all.
Okay.
So does the Terraform version of it work correctly?
So I think that's definitely one of the benefits working in general with Terraform. So if you run Terraform, you see the drift. There are some parts, obviously, where it's also not working. So I think it's not perfect yet. And maybe will never become perfect, but it's definitely helpful in detecting the most devastating drifts in your infrastructure. Especially what it's not capable of, I think, is having drift detection on assets which are changed from multiple in multiple places. So, for example, a security group, you can add in multiple places some security port openings, and that's something which obviously is not really easily detectable because you just create a security group and then in multiple places you add your policies there. If it's really contained in one resource, then definitely it's working. Yes.
And does the drift detection then, can you configure it to run from time to time? Because basically what you're looking for is, I don't know, a notification that notifies you whenever the drift becomes added to the infrastructure.
Yeah, so in Terraform Cloud, it's configured running nightly. So it's basically a nightly build, what we also know from software development. That's how they are tackling the problem.
This sounds really cool. So using Terraform Cloud, maybe I should give it another try and to look into it. But one question that I have. So I'm kind of new to Terraform. So I'm using Terraform for 2 years now, I think. I'm getting more and more into it because I'm a little frustrated with the other options with CloudFormation and CDK. So the question I have, which I never found a very good, or I found some solutions to it, but I'm not yet decided on how to approach that. So how do you deploy multiple environments with Terraform? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, let's say you have a test environment and a prod environment, and you want to use as much code as possible for both environments. So what's your approach, or one of your approaches to use Terraform to deploy to multiple environments?
I think it's a question anyone has when using Terraform, and there is no final answer, I think, to that problem yet. Terraform in general, I think, is not tackling these problems by themselves. So they want to be unopinionated about how you're managing your environments, and you have to find your own solutions for that. And one way we found for us working quite well is the concept of, which TerraGrunt introduced, of live repositories. So we are working with modules which are defining the resources you need for a specific solution. This is versioned, and you have like your version state of the specific solution. And then in another repo, we are defining the different stages and only calling this module to be deployed. So basically what we achieve with it is just as little as possible repeatable code, and by changing certain variables, defining the differences in the different stages. So we are working a lot with locals there, Terraform locals, which they are a lighter approach than using variables for everything. Variables are great if you work on a module and want reusability, because it gives you also the documentation feature out of the box. But yeah, if you want to work in a live repo, you are normally not really redefining anything, but you're changing just what you already know. And so for live repos, I don't find variables quite useful, and locals are much more lightweight and dynamic in that sense to be changed throughout the different stages.
So let me try to summarize what you've said in my own words, if I understood everything correctly. So first of all, your approach is to work with Git Terraform modules, which means you try to encapsulate certain functionalities into modules, and those are their own repositories, and you basically reference those, and they get loaded from the other repository, which is called a live repository, which more or less contains the configuration for a certain environment or certain environments. It basically only loads all those modules together and hands over the parameters, the variables, to each of those modules. And then I think one thing I did not yet understand fully is the locals. Mm-hmm. So locals, is this something like a configuration file with parameters, or what do I need to have?
So in Terraform, locals is really just a way of configuring variables. Compared to variables in Terraform, you cannot change them from the outside, but a live repository, you anyway don't want to change from the outside. And locals are really something which is local to that specific Terraform code. And they don't have the same traits as variables, where you need to define description, or where you can define description and all that. But it's more a dynamic way of working.
Okay, and then the other question I have is, so you mentioned TerraGrunt, mm-hmm. So where you basically got the idea of using the same similar approach. Mm-hmm. So I'm currently introduced TerraGrunt to one of my consulting projects, and I found it quite interesting, the approach. So for me, TerraGrunt solved basically two issues. So one is putting together all those modules with their configuration and variables. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I really was excited about is that TerraGrunt automatically creates state S3 bucket and DynamoDB table for me out of the box. This was really cool. Mm-hmm. You said you're most often not using TerraGrunt. So what is your pros and cons for using TerraGrunt? Mm-hmm. What's your experience with that?
Definitely. When working again with smaller teams, collaborating on a monorepo, you need to really understand what it means to work with a monorepo. And I think especially governance features, so having really good merge rules in place, is something very difficult in monorepos. And then the other part is having really responsibility about different parts of the Terra Grant repository, is something which is quite hard to manage at times. And I think, and what I see in the industry, is that Google, I think, is one of the biggest promoter of monorepos, has a big team behind it and its own tool how to work with monorepos. And normally, for me, as far as I understand, Git is not really built with that intention in mind. So that's kind of definitely one downside I see from the approach TerraGrant is taking. What is really a frustrating feature sometimes in Terraform, on the other hand, is that module versions you cannot dynamically define. So you have to hard code always the version number in Terraform. Mm-hmm. And that's a feature which TerraGrant brings to you with its scripting approach, where it just replaces those version numbers. And yeah, that's something mm-hmm. Which is really helpful with TerraGrant, that you really can define dynamically your versions. Yeah, I think with working with 1 to 5 people, I think TerraGrant has really some great benefits, where you have really that overview in one place about all your components. But then with larger teams, you don't necessarily need that anymore, because the teams anyway have their responsibilities. And then step by step, the benefits get less and less. And I'm also not a mm-hmm. huge fan of the dependency feature. You don't have to necessarily mm-hmm. use it, but it makes mm-hmm. Work quite slow and very fragile. It makes it harder to refactor later on. And it's mm-hmm. Something which tightly couples your different states together. And that's mm-hmm. Quite complex sometimes.
So that was my feeling already as well. So my project is relatively small mm-hmm. at the moment. So I think I have about 10 different Terraform modules that I need to glue together with TerraGrant. But already those dependency, the way the dependency management works with TerraGrant feels a little little complicated to me already. So I can I can see that this gets more of a problem when the complexity and the number of modules grows. Okay, so in summary, you say that TerraGrant is maybe fine for smaller projects with, I don't know, a bunch of people working on it. But when it gets more complex and you're working with more people on it, it might be a better approach to use some of the principles, but build them with Terraform native tools, basically. That's your take on that. Okay.
And bringing TerraGrant into CI/CD system, I think, is also very interesting. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. with that, you need also a lot of implementation work to get TerraGrant into a CI/CD approach. If you're not really strict with running TerraGrant apply all that approach. Yeah.
Okay. So I have one more pain point mm-hmm. with Terraform Cloud. I told you that I looked into Terraform Cloud multiple times. So I think the last time was about 3 months ago. So basically, before I decided to use TerraGrant, I looked into Terraform Cloud to see whether this solves some of my issues that I had in the project. And the one thing I noticed, or I couldn't find a very good solution, is so Terraform Cloud, I could not really find a good solution for my AWS credentials. So because to deploy to different AWS accounts, I need to have my credentials in place. And what I don't want to do, and even not allowed to do in this environment, is to create IAM users with static credentials. So I was looking for ways to basically use an IAM role and similar approach. So I know from GitHub Actions that they have this OpenID Connect providers, or basically they connect with AWS over OpenID Connect. So I was wondering how to do the same with Terraform Cloud, and I really could not find a cool solution that was working out of the box. So what are your approaches for using AWS credentials to deploy from Terraform Cloud? I think one way that I found is you can use Vault, HashiCorp's Vault product for that. That's maybe one idea, but I was not too convinced about that as well. So maybe, what's your take on all those AWS credentials with Terraform Cloud?
Yeah, so I think it's not also, it's a feature which is at the moment also widely discussed. In general, I would agree that as a best practice, there should be a workflow with short-lived credentials, the roles which are attached to a specific Terraform apply and plan phase should be tightly scoped. So a lot of projects I've worked on normally, the projects start with an admin role kind of and put it on the Terraform Cloud, and then the governance part and security part is really not worth a lot anymore. And so somehow we need to establish with a certain workspace or with a certain state an identity, and so that AWS knows, okay, this is the specific state which is calling me now and which needs the right credentials for that specific time to plan and apply the changes which are intended to be rolled out into the specific environment. And with that, I think the one way which is a lot described in Terraform Cloud is to build your own API-driven workflow. So you have a full API behind Terraform Cloud, then you can use, for example, GitLab OIDC feature or the GitHub Actions OIDC feature to get the short-lived credentials and inject it into the pipeline at runtime. Also quite a hard way to do it. You have to also, again, to implement quite a lot. And recently we worked together with HashiCorp in a project where we had first insights into also an OIDC driven workflow within Terraform Cloud, where it's possible to actually get short-lived credentials from the workflow identity which is established with AWS. And that's a feature I think a lot more will come in the future from HashiCorp. For now it was used in one project.
So let me try to recap that. So the first approach that you had is you're basically using the API of Terraform Cloud, and as GitLab comes with an OpenID Connect integration, you could use that to obtain temporary credentials for AWS, and then you use the Terraform Cloud API to hand those over to Terraform Cloud, and then you could basically there run your Terraform apply or Terraform plan with those credentials. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. Cool. And then the other thing that you talked about is that also Terraform or HashiCorp is working on a feature, and so you are in contact. You have been in contact with them for a project and have already been using that a little bit. So there is something upcoming, and that solves that issue comes with the feature for OpenID Connect in the future.
Yes, and I think that's definitely a great feature, and I'm very excited about that part, because it's always in a lot of projects I've worked on the question how really to solve this problem, and there are not a lot of great answers out there yet, and I'm really looking forward that we have more clarity on that, and because it's quite an important part of a good CI/CD process, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, what we have always been doing, we have been using Code Pipeline and Code Build a lot, because this really came out of the box with an IAM integration. You could easily assume an IAM role doing that pipelines, and this was, in my opinion, a very important part of the deployment or delivery pipeline. And since GitHub Actions now comes with that OpenID Connect integration, I think this was really the showstopper for GitHub Actions, and now that this is solved, it's really a really cool alternative to use GitHub Actions. And nowadays, we are migrating and building more and more of our pipelines with GitHub Actions. Mm-hmm. So I think this is really a crucial feature for all kinds of continuous integration, continuous deployment tools to come with that OpenID Connect integration, because that's really, I think it's even really easy to set up, because you don't need to configure too much. So you configure the OpenID Connect provider for AWS, an IAM role, and that's basically more or less it. So at least that's for what I know from GitHub. Yeah. So that's really cool to have that feature in the future for Terraform Cloud as well. So I want to come back to one other aspect that you talked before. So you mentioned that you use the approach that you have one repository with the configuration for the different environments, and then you use Terraform modules. And so basically you have different modules. Maybe we should talk about what kind of modules you use, or what's a typical model look like. And you're storing that in another GitLab repository. So maybe the first question, so what does a typical module look like? So how do you, because for me it's sometimes quite hard to decide on how big or how large the scope of a module be. So what do you put into a module? Should that be two or three modules, stuff like that? So so could you maybe share, so what does a typical GitLab module that you're using look like, or what do you include in such a module?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of design thinking and really looking at what you want to achieve. And packaging a full solution, I think, is something we as DevOps engineers can really achieve. And so for me, thinking as the second part is thinking about the layers of your application, the architecture behind this application, and how long a certain part of the application needs to live. So for example, persistent storage is always something which normally should survive any deletion of the application. And so maybe it's part of a different state in the end. So, and structuring your code around the one side layers of your application, but then also building out full solution, I think is the two things I always keep in mind when designing modules. And I think sometimes you have to think about also cross-account functionality. And some people say, okay, we structure per account, and then we have states which only can change this account as files or resources. And with that come some difficulties in my experience where you, for example, for resource sharing, you need to get an approval from the other accounts. So you have a chain of order in which you need to execute Terraform or the different states. Mm-hmm. And that makes it quite complex. So I like to go more into this is a full solution, having access to multiple accounts. It gives me more gives more a necessity to build out good roles and good practices in scoping what kind of access this role has in different accounts. But then long term, you really benefit from this very easy rollout process where you don't have to, where human error is not such a big factor anymore.
So I have an example on that I've been working on recently. So one of the things that I tried to accomplish was I wanted to enable security hub and guard duty in the accounts of the organization. You might have heard about that issue before. Yeah. And my problem was maybe a little more difficult than it needs to be because for certain reasons that I don't want to talk about at all, we were not able to use that. I think there are those new features to invite the whole organization or a whole organization unit. We couldn't use that. So basically what we needed to do is we need to add each individual account to Security Hub and to Guard Duty manually. Mm-hmm. So establish that connection basically the old way. And what I've been doing there, so basically I started with the same. So you say in that scenario, so basically you have to configure Security Hub in your main security account, and then you have to basically enable and link every member account to that. So you are arguing that in that case, that this might be a good or a good approach might be to have one module that tackles all of that, but then needs, of course, different credentials for assuming each and every AWS account. Did I get that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, because I have taken the other path. So I have one module that handles the main security account and then a module for each. And actually, I'm running into that issue that it to deploy that, I need to know that first I need to roll out that module, and then I need to roll out those other modules. So there's some invisible basically dependency between those modules that then I need to document and make sure in the pipeline that it runs in the right order. So there's definitely I definitely understand your argument. But this should maybe be one module for all those accounts. Yeah, okay.
And we have definitely also used that approach in different projects. So we have also can also speak from experience that it's quite natural to use it. But then I think sometimes when revisiting your solution, you think about it, maybe I can do it better. And I think that's really important in our line of business to reevaluate what we're doing. There are not like always the best solutions out there, and we constantly change, and so that's I think one of the most interesting parts about our job
that's true. And on the other hand, I think each and every, so either option that you take has some downs and some pros and cons, so I think that's always you can, so if you have a module covering a large scope, you're running into other issues than if you reuse multiple smaller modules. So there's no perfect way to do it. There's just different pros and cons, and you have basically to decide on which pros and cons fit best for the scenario that you're working on or the overall thing. So one question that that comes to my mind when talking about those modules. So Demicon is a consult. It's doing AWS consulting. So you have different clients with different needs. So do you try to build modules that you can use for all your consulting clients? Or is that something you really tailor to the needs of every customer? Or is it a mix of both? Or how do you approach that, basically?
Yeah, I think if it would be just one library which we can use for every client, the consulting part would be very small. And I think, it's every organization is very different in their needs. And I think in modules, you can really also mirror the organizational structure, because a technology solution, in my opinion, should always also be tailored around organizational structures, because otherwise they cannot really be used in that kind of organization. And that's plays a lot a big role in our approaches on how we are working with the customer together on solutions which fit really their needs. So we have a basic module library where some groundwork is already be done, and it's more like this, in German you call it Baukastensystem, so modular blocks which you piece together and have in the end a very tailored solution to the customer's problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we have been doing similar thing with CloudFormation templates in the past. So we built a library of CloudFormation templates, stuff like setting up a VPC or spinning up an RDS database pre-configured, or even some more complex stuff, maybe static web hosting with CloudFront DNS3 and stuff like that. When we have been doing consulting work, we use those templates basically for the foundational work. So most often we could just use those templates to get the basic infrastructure done. And then there was, 20% left, which needs to be then tailored to the really needs of the specific customer and the circumstances there. I think that works very well as least for smaller companies that are fine with just following your approach. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, when working with large enterprise customers, we were most often not able to use those templates because they have so specific needs for networking. They have very specific opinions on security stuff, very specific company rules for encryption or something like that. So then it get very difficult to reuse those modules. We then tailor those basically to the needs of our clients. And I think that's what you are saying as well. So you try to reuse the modules where you can, because basically as a consultant, this brings in a lot of value. If you have, 20 or 50% already done with your modules that you bring with you, that is, of course, a reason to hire you for the job, right? But then on the other side, you need to tailor that to the needs and have in mind what the organization cares about, stuff like that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. So speaking about those Terraform modules, so I know that there are some open source Terraform modules out there as well. So do you have any favorite, basically, providers of those open source modules that you can recommend?
Yeah, so I think from the open source community, there's definitely a lot of work put into good modules as well. And one of the repositories, which is definitely one of the most known ones and has a really high quality, I would say, is the Terraform AWS modules namespace in GitHub. So yeah, I think that's we can definitely recommend, and also where some from CloudPosse, another company who has open sourced quite good Terraform modules to use for kickstarting your project.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so I'm aware of those Terraform AWS modules because I have talked to Anton Babenko, who is who is doing them. And I've used them as well, and I think this is really a good advice to use those available open source modules.
Yeah.
It does not cover everything, of course, but it really gives you a jump start for the project,
yeah.
And you don't have to reinvent the wheel over and over again. So it makes sense to use some of those modules. And there's one thing I can I can share with one thing that is really important is. To pin the version of the module that you're using. So I know, so Anton Babenko shared the story with me. So he says whenever he releases a new version of a module, he immediately gets complaints from people around the world that are using this module and just using the latest version whenever they deploy. This is basically his way to test his modules. He just pushes out a new version and sees the feedback that comes in. So you don't want to do that. You don't want to be that guy. So you should definitely pin the version for the open source modules that you're using, and to make sure that over time you're only changing the version if you really want to and decide to, and that not just when someone else publishes a new version. That is important.
It's definitely, really highly recommended to do that. You can have really big problems in your next rollout if you don't have that. And, that will cause unforeseen work times, and I think that's something everybody wants to avoid. And so I definitely can agree with that.
Okay, so Rico, this was great. So we talked a lot about how you build infrastructure pipelines with GitLab and Terraform Cloud. So I learned a lot from you, especially about all those Terraform Cloud things that I didn't know about yet. And this really will help me with my Terraform project. So I think the last thing I want to highlight is that if you watching or listening to this podcast and are interested in building infrastructure as code and continuous delivery and basically infrastructure pipelines as well, then I have good news for you, because Demicon is hiring a cloud solution architect for AWS as well. So you could become the future colleague of Rico and join him building infrastructure as code and infrastructure pipelines. So you will find a link to details about this open position in the show notes. So check that out and apply. So as we said, Demicon is a remote first company operating in Germany and hiring in Germany and Europe. So check out this open position and get into AWS and infrastructure pipelines and infrastructure as code as well. Thank you very much, Rico, for sharing all your experience with me, for sharing insights into your day-to-day challenges as a builder. This was really cool. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks, Andreas, for the opportunity, and was definitely great having that conversation. It's always interesting to get new ideas and also have different perspectives on the things we do every day.
Thank you very much, and also thanks for listening. Welcome to another series of The Builder's Diary by Claudonaut.